Hey folks, just a quick note about the following podcast. This is from a morning when part of what we did together as a community was share some stories, some of our own stories about the different kinds of things we might use a word like amazement for, or words that are synonyms to that. And that sort of happened about a third of the way into what you'll find on this podcast. So you won't find any content in terms of responses there, because the way that works is that our community is a safe place for people to say what they want to say, and that means it doesn't get broadcast to the whole world on the internet. But I would encourage you, when it comes to that part of the podcast, to just hit the pause button for a moment and think about your own experiences. If you're with someone, or you're listening to this with someone, or having a conversation with them about it afterwards, do that exercise together. Just ask the question that we asked as a community, and talk about what comes to mind, and talk about it in the context of the podcast, about this idea that that encounters with the divine seem to reside with a unique kind of clarity and depth in things that are disruptive, not in things that are all tidy and warm and fuzzy. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. I know that some of the people who listen to this podcast are folks that are physically part of the community whenever they can be and can't always be. And this sort of subs in for that. I know that some of you are far away geographically and couldn't be here even if you wanted to. And this is your connection to the Table community here in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Thanks for listening. We feel your presence when we gather, and we're grateful to know that that we get to share this good thing we have in this particular way. Peace.
So last week, I shared a little bit about the poet Mary Oliver's work, in particular her Instructions for Living a Life, which I summed as these from her work. She writes, "Pay attention, be astonished, tell about it." Pay attention, be astonished, tell about it. And I also mentioned that she had written that attention is the beginning of devotion. And in response to that, Ray Bernier, our Timbits supply chain, among other things, who sent me an email to remind me that he couldn't be here this morning, that it was my responsibility to bring the Timbits. He said it was time to engage our, how did he put it? Engage our alternative supply chain, I think was a phrase he used. Anyway, Ray sent me a response after that morning, which he sometimes does, and I always enjoy. And in this particular response, he sent me a movie clip, and I asked him if I could tell the story and share the clip. So here you go.
Your life seems unbelievable to me. All of this, like, life seems unbelievable to me.
My father says that almost the whole world is asleep. Everybody you know, everybody you see, everybody you talk to. He says that only a few people are awake, and they live in a state of constant, total amazement.
It's a very dark clip on a not very bright screen, and so maybe you couldn't see the fact that Tom Hanks looks like he's about 12 years old. And I haven't seen the movie, but I'm intrigued by the connection between the ideas of being awake, which I would equate with paying attention, among other things, attending to the world we're in, and living with a sense that life is, at its very core, amazing. And amazing in ways that point to something beyond me. I would use spiritual language for that. I would say that this idea that being awake to life is going to be, in some way or other, some ways or other, a spiritual experience. Now, that word amazing, that could easily be one of those words that gets turned into not very meaningful mush, I think pretty easily, sort of like we've done with awesome, or maybe with more powerful word like love. So I want to do a little bit of word recovery this morning, just to help us think bigger. So here's a pretty standard definition of the word amazing. I've got Judy juggling all kinds of things, but there we go, amazing. Dictionary definition, causing great surprise or wonder, astonishing. Example, an amazing number of people showed up at the table on Sunday. Yes, I chose that on purpose for this Sunday. So that's a pretty standard definition, and I think it feels, at least to me, feels pretty consistent with the ways that I would use that word or most commonly hear it used, right? That sort of feels resonant with that. It's not so bad. And if I think about that definition in terms of the clip we just watched, the idea of going through life with a sense of great surprise or wonder sounds delightful to me. It also sounds like a little bit distracting, you know? I think sometimes it can feel like we need all of our faculties just to not, you know, not die in traffic, or to just make the right decision in the cereal aisle. I mean, like, it feels sometimes like we just kind of have to marshal everything we've got to get through the everyday things of life. And so that idea of living in a constant state of surprise or wonder might take a little balancing out, but not a bad way to live. But here's where the idea of being amazed by life starts to get really intriguing for me. So look at this. These are the synonyms. Didn't make these up. These are the synonyms from that same dictionary definition for the word amazing. Astonishing, astounding, surprising, bewildering, stunning, staggering, shocking, startling, stupefying, breathtaking, perplexing, confounding, dismaying, disconcerting, shattering. That is a different set of ideas, it seems to me, than causing great surprise or wonder, astonishing. The first definition, when you set it next to the synonyms, that first definition can start to feel sort of shiny, happy, small compared to the synonyms, you know? Like, potentially delusional to go through life by that first definition. Synonyms? Meh. Who hasn't had the feeling of bumping into the endless stream of information we call news and feeling some of those things, you know, like feeling bewildered or dismayed or perplexed or shocked? But to think of those kind of experiences as amazing, that might take some work. So let's try. I want to see if I can get this idea down off the dictionary shelf and into our everyday lives just a little bit. So let's start really close to home. Personal experiences. Can you think of any experiences you have had this past year that were either by the first definition or by one of those synonyms, or a collection of them for that matter, amazing? Working with that definition and synonyms for amazing, can you think of any experiences you've had this past year that were amazing? Mm-hmm. I know we could keep going, but I wanted to start close to home with that, because experiences that land all over that list of adjectives are, by definition, amazing. I had an interesting conversation with someone this past week who had been distressed by the fact that they felt like their particular church's Christmas pageant was a bit short on Jesus. And looking at the story they were telling me from inside of much of the way Christmas gets treated by Christianity these days, they weren't describing a situation I felt personally resonant with, but they were describing a situation I felt familiar with. And I was kind of listening to that description, and I could appreciate what they were saying. I wanted to be sensitive to where they were coming from. I hope that I was. I also wanted to say something to them that I hoped would stir up their imagination and help them think bigger about some of the things about the Jesus story that tend to get looked at through a very particular lens only at this time of the year. And that's a lens that I would regard as tending to be sort of about the obvious warm, fuzzy aspects of the Jesus story vis-a-vis Christmas, which I realized this past week, maybe more on this another time, but was starting to sound a lot to me like Baby Yoda story as well. Like, who's the new fascinating creature, you know? Could we license that? Oh boy, have we licensed that. Anyway, so I was kind of having this experience with them and thinking that, so there's kind of the warm, fuzzy aspects of the Christmas story that tend to get really hammered on at this time of the year, and there's also the traditional theological drive-at-home versions of the story. It's like, we're going to tell this story so we can tell a different story. But we got a big emotional hook with this one because there's a baby, and it's all kind of remarkable, like babies are. And we're gonna drive this thing as far as we can in terms of making our theological point. But if you think for a moment about the experiences of the vast majority of the characters in what I'm going to just call broadly the Christmas stories this morning, the warm and fuzzy approach to those stories is actually not where the characters are living. The experiences of the vast majority of the characters in the first Christmas stories have more in common with the young adult that I talked with this past week who just came right out and said it. She just said, I really don't like Christmas. And when we talked about it, it was like, well, she's away as a student. She's going home for Christmas, and home is not a happy story. It's broken relationships and dysfunction and unreasonable expectations. And she said, my mom can't even put up a tree. I'll do that when I get home. You know, I mean, there's just lots of layers to this for lots of people, right? Those are the kind of experiences that might leave us feeling more dismayed or shattered than kind of blissed out on wonder. And it's not that the characters in that first set of stories have nothing to be amazed about. It's more that their experience of being amazed is stirred up by something that is more challenging in the human experience than what I'm going to call innocent wonder. So there is, of course, a way to say that's amazing about experiences where, like, we know how to use that language ironically or sarcastically, right? This is how I feel about most of the stream of tweets that pours out of Washington some days. That's amazing. We have an inflection for that's unbelievable, about which we use amazing as well. But it's kind of more the way we'd use the word to describe something that strikes us as especially stupid or unbelievable in a way that makes us wonder, what was that person thinking? Kind of like, Justin's infamous, seriously? From last year. Or it's kind of a WTF way to use the word, right? Here's the thing. When it comes to the so-called Christmas stories and a sense of wonder, my take on it would be that most of those first Christmas stories are about things that are in the list of synonyms. By the way, I know that there are lots of ways to read and think about this collection of stories. There's lots of different lenses we could read them through. I'm not going to debate about that. I'm not going to wade into their historicity or what kind of literature they are or might be. It's pretty fascinating and well worth wading into. I'm just not going to do that this morning. I'm going to just deal with the stories as we have them on the page as stories, albeit with a little bit of generous reading between the lines. So let's think about this for a moment. We've got this story in the first Christmas stories about Zechariah the priest. Zechariah comes home from work, unable to speak, but still somehow manages to communicate to his correspondingly elderly wife that he thinks that they should try again to get pregnant. How do you think Zechariah feels about having had some kind of spiritual experience that was so disturbing that it compromised his ability to communicate? How does his wife feel about having this whole thing brought up again? Not, by the way, in that culture, and in the stories that we're still referencing from it, fertility issues were always about the woman. There's no barren men in the Bible, only barren women. But of course, it's not always about the women, is it? So there's that. Human sexual interaction can be breathtaking, of course. But it can also be confounding, dismaying, disconcerting, shattering. What kind of interaction is this story about? Oh, wait, Tim, the story isn't about sex. It's about the fulfillment of prophecies and miraculous births. Well, at Christmas we might choose to think that way. We might even feel a bit smug about our choice to think that way. But what if we've got it backwards? What if we're choosing to see these stories as being about things that are impossible or miraculous? What if choosing to see these stories that way is what actually robs them of their sense of everyday wonder? Just stay with me for a minute here. In the Zechariah and Elizabeth story, there's a lot of complicated things that have to do with human interactions, that have to do with something that sits very close to the core of the human experience, which is our sexuality in general, and in this case, pertaining to conception. And in this story, some of that isn't working, and it hasn't been for a long time. And if we don't think that affected this relationship, we're just not awake. And we're for sure going to miss some of what is amazing about this story. More on that in a moment. Let's talk briefly about the Mary and Joseph story. We'll explore this more on the 29th, but for today, just a snapshot of the moment when Joseph finds out that his fiancée is pregnant and he knows the baby isn't his. In fact, what he's been told is that in biological terms that he understands, there's no way his fiancée could be pregnant at all. The obvious explanation is that he's been lied to, he's been deceived, he's been betrayed, he's been cheated on. Seriously? I think it would be fair to imagine that this comes, as we might understatedly call, a great surprise to Joseph. Not the sort of thing to call up a blissful, naive sense of amazement. That's for sure. And what about the shepherds? What about those shepherds? If there was such a thing as a shepherd's union, I think it would have been appropriate for them to provide the shepherds with some post-traumatic counseling support. When was the last time you got, oh, I know the answer for some of you, but when was the last time you got jolted out of that almost asleep state by something that you absolutely could not comprehend? Closest I came this past week was when our dog Mika, who sometimes sleeps not just in our bed, but like right beside my head, and she, her and I were both just night, just getting into it, you know, it's a nice, happy, serious sleep. And one of our kids came home late, and she heard the door, and she went from 0 to 60, like, instantly. She went to full bark, and she was, like, 2 inches from my head. I just about threw her across the room. And that was for something that was, in the end, easily and quickly assimilated as being good news, right? It didn't take me very long to go, oh, yeah, like, you know, Tyrion's home, good, right? Let's go back to our synonyms for a moment. I might have been temporarily bewildered, but I wasn't shattered. But these guys, the shepherds, as we've got the story, they got upended in ways that messed not with just one night of their sleep or work routines, but that upended their place in an entire social strata. It was, to put it mildly, disruptive. And we haven't even talked yet about my favorite characters in this whole collection of stories, the Magi. You know, those Zoroastrian astrologers who have to get up just when everyone else is trying to go to bed in order to make sense of the meaning of everything by studying the movement of the stars, which is something we could all kind of do if we just paid attention. So that's who they are in the story. Here's what I find remarkable about all of these stories. As these stories are framed in the Gospels, all of these characters end up having profoundly life-changing encounters with the divine. The experiences aren't always pretty. In fact, most of them are messy at best, and many of them are something more akin to life-shattering traumas. They're the kind of experiences that when we're in them, are not going to feel good. They are not stories about babies that don't cry, about romances that survive betrayal, about careers irrevocably altered by an unanticipated crisis, but then that turns out to really be the gateway to a new notoriety. They are not the blissful, childlike version of wonder. But in all of them, the characters encounter the divine in the middle of the mess, in the middle of the disruption, like they never have before. There's no shortage in these stories of people being amazed. There's just a shortage of people that are amazed because everything is going like they think it should. What if that idea is sort of like a clue that points us toward kind of the portal to amazement? Maybe it's a bit of a strange image to choose, portal, because it's too singular, it's too exclusive, it's too hit it right or miss it entirely. Because really, we could take from this collection of stories the thought that we're much more likely to encounter the divine in the middle of the messes or the disruptions or the disasters of our lives than we are likely to have that same encounter in the middle of smooth sailing. And this is the kind of idea that helps me feel hopeful about living in a post-religious world, which is generally how I feel about that. Maybe God doesn't live in the definitions, but in the synonyms. Maybe God doesn't live in the tidy, but in the messy. Maybe God doesn't live in the soothing so much as in the disrupting. I bumped into an article by a kind of contemporary spiritual guru the other day. And somebody who kind of came to this status in our culture as later in their life, midlife, and whose early story looked like stereotypical success. They were high-powered lawyer, had a nice house, fancy car, high-voltage career. Their life was an absolute train wreck. In the process of sort of figuring that out and recovering from it and altering their life, they started to write about and podcast about and share about the spiritual things that they were learning from that wreckage. And the quote that I read from them last night was, I won't get it verbatim and I didn't put it in my notes, but the idea was that when you're having the sort of experiences, he kind of talked in that quote about how broke they were as a family. He's like, I'm writing and podcasting about all these spiritual principles, and we lost our garbage pickup because I couldn't pay the fee. The bank was like every month for coming for your house. Like we just could hardly afford to live. But I'm learning these things. I'm learning these spiritual truths that are changing my life, that are bringing it around to being well and not just a complete disaster. And what he said at the end of that particular little part that I was reading was, when you're having these experiences, they don't feel good. They feel like hell. But it's where you're being formed. It's where we're being formed. It's where we're being formed by something beyond ourselves, for which I've been using the word divine this morning. God, if you will. Not about babies that don't cry. Not about happily ever after romances. Not about work disruption that then turns into fame and wealth. It's just about disruption. And about the fact that that disruption is not only not a place that God does not live, but a place where perhaps uniquely God does live. Peace.